Hi, I'm Graham Lasso, and you're listening to Eat, Sleep, Chelsea Repeat with Chris, Craig, and Brady.
Welcome to the Eat, Sleep, Chelsea Repeat pod. The headline this week, Chelsea send the Saints marching home with a 4-0 thrashing. Today, I am just joined by my brother Craig. How you doing?
I'm good. We're back in the Champions League places, so I'm happy.
Yeah, it's been... Well, we seem to end up in the sort of top four, top five at the end of a lot of these game weeks, even though we kind of shuffle around quite a bit as the games...
That's because there's, I think, 3 points between... five points between eighth and third.
Yeah, some good results, I think, as well, right? We're getting some really favourable results.
Yeah, well, some of these teams are running out of puff, I think, a little bit as well, with their smaller squads, not getting quite as lucky as they were earlier in the season as well. So, yeah, things are evening out a bit better as well.
All right, let's dip into the Chelsea game. And let's hear your reaction after the game.
All right, full time at Stamford Bridge here. It's finished 4-0 to Chelsea. In all honesty, one of the easiest games we've played here for a long time. Southampton very much playing in the Championship already, offering very little in the game. Cole Palmer probably could have got a hat-trick as well. 4-0, could have been 7 or 8. Not really much else to say. I think we predicted a must-win game, a good result today, and now that's how it ends, 4-0 Chelsea.
A pretty routine win in the end, it seems.
Yeah, I think, obviously, like I said in the voice note, we predicted a result that we would get today. Obviously, the performance came with it as well, which was decent, which is nice, and that's plus four for our goal difference as well. But yeah, like I said, Southampton very, very poor in the game, and a lot of teams have come here and lost this season, but sort of offered a bit more threat, looked like Premier League teams, you know, have offered something on the counter or have pressed us really well, or that something stood out for them. I can't say really there's a redeeming feature that I could think about Southampton's play. It was drab,
and we do become the first team to score 4 goals against them in their away matches this season, so a nice little booster for us, and they have played the likes of Arsenal, City already, so nice to put the nail in, so to speak. Right, so we've had 4 goals, 2.4 expected goals, 0.7 for Southampton. Goals from Nkunku, Neto, Colwell and Cucurella, who seems to be finding the score sheet quite a bit this season. 60% possession for Chelsea, 90% pass accuracy, 10 shots on target out of 19, really high, and only 2 saves for Jorgensen. Let's have a chat about likes and dislikes from this one. Well, you can pick what you want to do first.
I'll do dislikes first. I think... The patience of the Stamford Bridge crowd. Obviously, we had a bit of a tiny little protest with, looks like about 50 people there protesting outside the ground before the game, surrounded by people taking photos. Obviously, a little bit embarrassing, but also the patience of the fans inside the ground was a bit thin. I've got to say, like, we had a lot of possession in the first half, and the goalkeeper, we struggled in the first 20 minutes, really, a little bit with playing out from the back. And the patience wasn't there from the fans. One thing I would say is, you know, the style of play, the themes running through the play is going to be the same. You know, the pressure is not going to be there. Maresca said after the game, he told Philip Jorgensen that if he kicked it long, he'd sub him. That's going to be our style of play. And you actually watch the real best attacking moments of play from us, and they were from our build-up. So I think my dislike is the patience of the crowd and just sort of accepting our style of play a little bit better.
Didn't that will just come with time, though? Like, the more that they do it and the more confident they see the team in playing that way, the less anxious they'll be.
Yeah, with results as well, obviously, is what will come, yeah.
Because obviously they've seen people like Sanchez and Jorgensen in those last game pass the ball directly to the opponents, which have led to, and obviously we've seen a lot of mistakes. So you can kind of understand it to a certain degree from the crowd. I do agree. I think there was a sort of sense of, what are we doing? But I do think that it was clear what we were doing if you were at the game. Like, you could see that they were trying to isolate Neto and, you know, get the ball into him and then sort of move people around off him, and that seemed to work quite nicely. So, yeah, I'm surprised it sort of didn't catch on, but obviously the more the game went on, the easier it got, really, in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess my dislike was pretty much the same, really. It was more around the crowd. I didn't really have... I mean, the game was pretty straightforward. I didn't really have anything else in terms of stuff that I didn't like about it. I mean, it was quite...
What didn't you like about the crowd? Just the same sort of thing, like the play?
Yeah, I think if we think back to some of the older teams that have played at Chelsea, we didn't really play like to that degree of like rigidness, but I do think there was a case of you have to let the team kind of have a go and then see how it goes, you know, almost at half time. And we don't seem to be a very supportive crowd at the moment. It's kind of like one mistake and everyone gets on the whole thing. Like, you know, you think back to some of the results from the previous games and stuff. So I don't really like that from the crowd. I do think it should be a more supportive approach. I thought that kind of echoed through what Maresca had kind of said previously as well, I think before the game. You've got to get behind the team. Like, even if you don't really like it or if you don't feel comfortable, you just got to, you know, that's the way they're playing. So you got to hope for the best and then analyse it. After a period of time, I think we're not going to shut down the tactics after 20 minutes against Southampton, are we? So, yeah, I think
definitely a few people around us were getting very, very impatient.
And like we hadn't had a shot for the first 20 minutes, I think, which was pretty alarming. I think the first shot came off 21 minutes, so there was that as well. But you got to give it some time. And obviously it got really good. Palmer had best chance of the game after about 23 minutes, 0.6 XG. So can't ask for more than that, can you?
Yeah, that brings us nicely round to my like, actually, which is the first goal of the game, obviously set-piece goals. And that's my overall like, is set-piece goals. Because we brought a coach in from Brentford that was very highly rated in the summer. And... to be honest, it's been a mixed bag with set pieces this year. I think there's been some that have looked really, some moments it's looked really good, and some that it's not looked, you know, good at all. And yeah, just nice in this game. The first three goals and three of the four goals came from set pieces, two corners and one free kick. So it's really, really good to see, you know, the set piece success and some good deliveries coming in. Obviously, the first one is a nice routine with Nkunku crashing the back post from a flick on as well. So yeah. Just happy with that overall. And we should be good from set pieces with Tosin in the team as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. It'd be nice to get more, I think. Although I do think our total of set piece goals is actually really is decent this season from memory. But I do think we can offer more, quite sizably challenged, I would say, in some areas. But that shouldn't stop us from being creative, as we saw at... the Etihad from Liverpool on the weekend. So, yeah, I'd like to see us do a little, some different stuff as well, not just hacking it in and, you know, hoping someone gets ahead of it. It'd be nice to see some more creative corners as well. Maybe we'll see that against some more difficult opposition in the future. My like from the game is another tactical tweak from Maresca. For obviously last week on the weekend against Villa, I thought it was a good change. And I thought he, again, adapted the tactics nicely to the opposition. Southampton never really looked like troubling us. And I thought we got out of their press. And their press isn't, like, dreadful. It's just, like, I don't think their defending's very good, which is probably what's caused a lot of their issues. But I thought he set the game up really well. I mean, you can't say fair on that. So I think he deserves some credit for... back-to-back games, really, setting us up to, I think, pretty good performances. Shame about the Villa result. That was obviously a mistake and a Cole Palmer miss, which probably could have clinched it for us. And then, yeah, I think we took full advantage. We were pretty clinical against Southampton. with the exception of Palmer, I'm sure we'll come on to. So, yeah, decent for Maresca again. He's had a tough period, so obviously criticising when he was poor, but you also have to show him some praise when he does a good job. So I think this was another good performance from Maresca as well, so we can take some solace from that going into the next couple of games.
Absolutely.
Right, let's have a chat about the players. Let's do some temps.
Time to see whose form's on top, who's heating up, whose temperature's dropped, who's been playing well and who's not. It's freezing, warming up, boiling hot.
Somehow you wrangled yourself to be first.
I was due to be first. I know you said it was supposed to be Brady, but I think I was due to be first today.
I don't think you were.
It's a controversial one for me. But I'm going with Caicedo, Moises Caicedo. And not because really, I don't think anyone was really bad in the game, but back-to-back games now, he's had two stupid yellow cards. Ridiculously poor yellow cards. One for dissent against Villa. And this tackle in the second half near the end of the game was so unbelievably stupid. It was like the guaranteed yellow card as well, where the referee had absolutely no chance. Had to give a yellow. And he is now on 9 yellow cards for the season, which means that if he gets a yellow card in our next game at home to Leicester, he will miss 2 games, and those 2 games will be Arsenal away and Tottenham at home. So that's why he's in the freezer. That is stupid.
I mean, he's going to get booked, isn't he? That's the reality. And it's a case of which games do you want to
between now and the end of the season, yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
So what 2 games do you want him to miss?
He's got to sort that out, Caicedo, overall. Like, obviously, look, he's one of our best players, if not our best player. And, you know, he's absolutely fantastic. We've praised him all season. He's been boiling hot a bunch of times. But got to say, if he's going to get 12 yellow cards a year and miss 3 games a season, that's not good enough, yeah? That is an area he can improve in. And you might say, you know, obviously you'll lose a bit of aggression with him maybe, but like these yellow cards, the dissent ones and the ones at the end of a Southampton game that you're 4-0 up in, these are the ones you can get rid of, you know. So, yeah, well-deserved freezer for Moises Caicedo for me.
Yeah, I think that's actually probably fair enough. I do think he's at the... let's not forget he's probably played the most minutes of everyone. He's not really had any subs, so there's also that as well, which will help next season. Hopefully there's someone who can come in and replace him in some of these games because he's working hard. But, I think fair point, really. I'm going to do the double really here and another freezer, but this one's for Cole Palmer.
Yeah, I'll see best players in the freezer.
Brady be angry hearing this. Look, no one thinks Cole Palmer isn't an amazing player, but his performance against Southampton was just not very good. And he missed so many chances.
1.3 XG's worth, actually.
Yeah, and we would get on a lot of players for that. And I don't mind him missing one or, you know, the odd chance. But, I mean, some absolute clear chances. And his confidence looks shot. I mean, he had his head in his hands at one point when he was put, I think, that one-on-one where Ramsdale saved it. He almost looked like he's looking up thinking, you know, is this what's happened to me now? Nothing's going to happen. Like, nothing's going my way kind of thing. He needs to get his head up and approach that with a better mindset, I think. He looked almost defeated, which is why he was throwing goal the next time. He didn't know if he was passing or shooting, and he didn't do either, and it went wide. He wasn't thinking straight. And then at the sort of second half, he's just hogging the ball, trying to shoot the whole time, and it was awful to watch, actually. I would have hauled him off. He just needs to. It's a team game, yeah. It's not Cole Palmer FC, even though it does feel like it sometimes. You just got to let things go, and the way the game goes is the way the game goes. But you got to approach the game as a team game still. Just because you're not scoring doesn't mean it's the end of the world. So I think he does need to approach the game with a more team mindset. But it'll come for him, and hopefully it comes. You know. in the Tottenham or the Arsenal game or whatever it is. So at the right time, we didn't need his goals, luckily.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, just echoing basically what you said, but, you know, he's in a mode right now mentally where he's trying to force a goal for himself. And, you know, I can understand the frustration. You've obviously gone basically every game scoring a goal, and now you've gone, you know, six games without scoring. I think you can understand the frustration from his end. But look, he'll continue to have chances. He's getting himself in good positions. Still an important player for us. I love that he takes responsibility on the ball in against, you know, teams like Southampton. He kept the ball a lot in midfield, you know, on the ball, trying to create opportunities by going from side to side, which works when, you know, teams are sitting lower in terms of, you know, trying to catch them out in their spacing when you've turned back quickly. I think, you know, I don't think I'd be as critical of him as to say that he was hogging it, you know, but he maybe trying to force a few things that naturally would have come to him. And also just sort of that chance, the second one especially, where he ends up caught in two minds, I think, probably whether to pass it to Enzo or to shoot. And I think those are the things that when he's in full flow and confidence comes a bit more naturally, as opposed to, you know, these spots where he's having to think that just that split second when you're off form, and that can, you know, be the difference.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll come back, but it's been a long time coming, I think, the freezer for him, if I'm completely honest. He's had a few poor games, he hasn't scored in a long time, and yeah, it was inevitable, really. But now he's here, he can dust himself down and get out and hopefully win us the game in either Copenhagen or against Leicester, depending on if he plays. Warming up.
Yeah, warming up, easy one for me, Enzo Fernandez. Back-to-back games, I've been really impressed with him. He's the first player to create five chances, win five duels, and win possession five times in a Premier League game multiple times this season, which is obviously like a testament to the balance in his game. But he's really strong in the duel against Southampton. And obviously, look, we're playing weak opposition, but that is, you know, what he was really known for. When the standout attributes from Benfica when he came was, you know, those duels, winning possession in midfield and creating chances. He, you know, one of the selling points and why we thought he's worth 100 million was the balance, you know, being really, yeah, really well balanced midfielder where he can sort of do everything. And I do think he runs the risk for me of being sort of a jack of all trades, master of none. And you know, that's something he has to work on. But I also thought he showed good leadership in this game as well. The urgency was there from him, and the same against Villa as well. You know, I think Maresca even said after the game he behaved as a leader, Enzo, on the pitch, which is what you want to see. You know, he's not everyone's favourite captain, but I thought he's done a good job in the last two games.
Yeah, he had a really good game. There were a few moments from him which just sort of feel his limitation, like when he was through and he was running and that guy caught up with him because he's too slow. And there was a few moments we didn't play the ball through that we're waiting for. But overall in the game, he was so good. And he was...
He didn't get an assist, right? Like, but he created
like seven scoring... shot creating actions. I mean, he had everything. He was kind of
he's the first player in the last 10 seasons for Chelsea to create three plus big chances and record seven plus key passes in a single Premier League game.
So, yeah, you
know, that's a testament to how creative he was as well.
Yeah, he was everywhere, and also he's benefited from the fact he had a lot of good players ahead of him who performed really well against a team that was obviously not a top team. But yeah, he was excellent. Enzo only ran the game, so this is a high expectation that we have for him. So obviously those numbers are very, very strong. So I'm not expecting that every game, but you know, he's setting himself some good benchmarks to hit when he's on it. So look, I think he was terrific. Really, really dominant in midfield, and this is what we want in these games, because it's easy to get complacent and it's easy to just feel like you're running at, you know, like you say, 60-70%, but he did show that intensity and he made us, don't say make us win the game, but he was a big factor in why we won, I think. All right, warming up for me, a controversial one, but one that I feel we need to address as part of the as part of the fact that Brady isn't here, and that's Chris Nkunku warming up.
Well, lucky Brady's not here; he would have been his boiling hot, the rocket taken off.
A goal and assist for Nkunku. Four shots, two on target.
He likes playing against Southampton. That was the last time he scored as well.
I think he likes playing in teams where he's got people around him that are moving a lot more. And I think there were a lot of people moving for him in this game, which was great. And I especially think he likes playing with Neto, who just runs around like a...
he runs around for two people, Neto, which is handy for Nkunku.
Well, yeah.
He runs around for half a person.
But you've got to say, the finish from the corner was very brave.
Yeah, I was going to say brave would be a word I would use. Yeah.
And so I appreciated that. He was really involved in the celebrations. He was really happy. We got to see the balloon, which everyone loves. And I thought it was a really good way to pass for the Neto assist as well. And yeah, he was, look, he was really good. He wasn't the best because I think people are expecting too much of him maybe in the left wing. But he was really good on the ball, and he was part of some really great moments for us. And we need, like Brady said before, we need him to like for the rest of the season, basically. So hopefully he can get his momentum going, and you know, get his match fitness up and get his sharpness up. And the goal kind of epitomised what he is, which is a real killer in the box, which he can be for us. And that was a really great header.
Not really what he is, but I think what he could be. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's what he has been before. So this is what we're looking for from him. And I was really happy that obviously everyone gets on his back after he does like one little thing. But I think overall, I think he was really great in the game. So
I think one of the reasons the fans in and around us are on his back is obviously just that, you know, everyone when you're at the games can see the level of effort. And I think it's not been there historically this season. But, you know, no criticism in this game of him. Thought he worked quite hard, he looked well up for scoring a goal in this game, which is more than I can say for him, you know, in the past. And you know maybe it just takes a little bit of time to get going for him. I know Colwell sort of defended him post-match, saying like, I know how much it means to him, so maybe, you know, we'll see the best of Nkunku as the season ends here, and you know, he'll get a run in the team in this left wing spot with Neto ahead of him, where he can sort of attack a bit more as well, and Kukurea comes up behind him there. And yeah, hopefully he performs really well. Like you said, we need him to, because there's no one else. And if we're going to finish top four, top five in the league, we need players like him to step up and perform at the high level we know they're capable of performing at. So yeah, was really happy for him. Like you say, happy to see the balloon. And yeah, just hope he can kick on. We've got some great games for him to do it in as well. Leicester, Copenhagen, twice as well, and we'll see if he can get some goals and get some confidence.
See if we can get a balloon down the Emirates.
Oh, a balloon down the Emirates, and all is forgiven for me for his past effort issues.
Yeah. All right, what are we on now? Boiling hot.
Boiling hot, easy ones. This is really easy for me, though. Caicedo for his stupid yellow card. Enzo for his fantastic performance in midfield, and boiling hot, Kukurea was absolutely outstanding, absolutely everywhere. I love it when he inverts into midfield. We saw it last season, at the end of last season under Posh, when we were playing really well, was Kukurea inverting into midfield, and Caicedo, they do an excellent job against weaker teams of just putting them on it. You know, you've got to be good on the ball, otherwise you're going to lose it. And they did a great job of, when they lumped it up to Oniachu, who chested the ball down or controlled it, Colwell stayed sort of pressing high up against him, and Kukurea came in from the other side and nicked the ball off him. They sort of, the pincer, as it was, because they're too slow to support him. And there's a few instances of that in the game where it worked out really well. But Kukurea is just like he's a freak. Like, he's a monster, pressing monster. he gives you absolutely no time. And yeah, we're going to need him down the run as well to step up, because he's just come off the back of a really, really poor couple of games against Villa and Brighton. So it was good to see him back on form and probably our best player.
Six tackles, says it all, really, for Kukure, who's outstanding. Got the goal as well. Let's not forget, that was a really good finish from him. Probably better than some
Eight
people.
Out of nine ground jewels won.
Yeah, it's just like, this is what I want from him. I've advocated for him being inverted whenever we can. He should be first choice for doing that. And he's just unbelievably... You need to release people like that when they've got that energy. You need to just let them loose on the pitch, because they'll cover loads of ground for you. And they'll do, like we say with Neto, exactly the same. You've got to let these guys do all the running. Like when they run for two people, let them do it. Don't constrain them, because if you leave it for people like Enzo, he's not going to do it, or Nkunku, because they don't actually have the capability to do it. So give it to the people who can do it. And Kukurea was so good in this game. Like, he was clearly the best player on the pitch by a long shot, I think. So yeah, easy boiling hot, I think, for him. Great performance. I think he got player of the match as well, which is great.
I saw someone else get player of the match on...
Was it Palmer? They always give it to me.
On the TV broadcast, it was not Palmer. I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Enzo. But...
Yeah, it could have been Enzo, to be fair. He was really good.
Yeah.
My boiling heart was probably Kukure. I mean, shout out to Neto, who again had a really, really difficult job. Let's be completely frank, yeah? He had an absolutely horrible job because he was up against Bella Kotchop. And that looked like, on paper, a mismatch, because Bella Kotchup's just like huge German centre back. But he played him, and he looked much better holding the ball up than some of the, other strikers at the club. I thought he was excellent, actually. Generally, he got a really good finish for the goal. Again, better finish than some of the other people I've seen shooting up front for us. So. Yeah, I think Neto's causing a bit of a problem, I think, for some of the people who might come back from injury. Because
not a problem. It's a really good thing.
Yeah, well, good.
It's another option
for Maresca. But I think he's... it's difficult because it's working quite well with him, and the balance seems quite nice. I do think Sancho's not the best on the other side, but so maybe there's something that we can do there. But maybe with Madueke coming back. But yeah, he's so good in this position. It'll be a shame to lose him from it. I think it would actually be quite a big drop off. So tough, but a great performance from Neto. Goal and assist. Can't ask more than that.
Yeah, I think coming into his own a bit for us. So with transfers, sometimes you should never know what's going to happen, how things are going to pan out. See. People like asking for experience and all that, because it guarantees success. Neto is a good example of, like, I'd expect him to have come in from Wolves this season and hit the ground running, decent Premier League success, 25 years old, or 24 when he signed, and he was going to come in and score 10, 12 goals this season and be a really important player for us. Hasn't quite happened for him at right wing in our setup. For whatever reason, I know he talked about in his post-match interview, the struggles of the style of play, not having as much space and how he was adapting to that. But yeah, he's found a role at false nine for us now, which has been really, really impressive. And yeah, like I said, you just don't know with these players. Sometimes they settle fast. Now it looks like he's settling a bit slower, but I do think the quality with him is there. The work rate's there. He looks like a player that can be part of a top winning team, and excited to see him grow.
He's on 7 GA in the Prem, and his highest ever was 11 at Wolves, so not a million miles away from replicating.
No, but you'd expect a player that comes from Wolves to Chelsea, especially a player that's not had any injuries this season, to be higher than 7 goals assists. But to be fair to him, I think he's been in and out of the team a bit as well, so maybe not as poor a season so far as maybe I'm being a bit harsh.
Yeah, and also he's never in a position. I mean, he's playing out front now. I mean, he wouldn't catch some of the other players being utilised the way he does, which is kind of a backhanded compliment in a way.
Yeah.
Because of how agile he is, and you know, he can move around left wing, right wing.
His work rate has been the big thing, hasn't it? That's revitalised our pressing. When we got Nkunku up top against Brighton, you know, that is, it's just not good enough, you know, and it's a letdown for the other players around him. You know, you saw Palmer throwing his arms up at him a few times against Brighton, because what's the point in you sprinting when someone else is half sprinting? You know, that it's frustrating. So one thing you can rely on Neto is that he is sprinting during the press, and that's really good to rely on that.
I think that comes back to Maresca, and you know, we talk about having players who play positions, and that's great, but you need people who fit your system. And like you say, Neto's pressing is what needs to be in that forward position. So I'm surprised it's taken this long, but like, When you don't have a player who's offering you a certain aspect of the game that you need, you shouldn't just put someone else in because that's, you know, a recognised position for them. You should look for the quality and the skill you're looking for, and I think, you know, that's what Neto brings when Jackson isn't there. It's the pressing element that starts at the front. So I hope he looks for that, you know, in some other stuff. And I think, you know, when Lavia isn't playing, I think Maresca's been culpable of not replacing the skills and the quality that Lavia has. He's almost tried to put someone else in and try and get around that issue. And I don't agree with that. So it's nice that he solved an issue with a like-for-like quality, which is, I think, worked nicely for him.
Yeah.
All right. Right, I mean, we can touch on the protest. There was about, you said 50 people. It was probably around 200 in total. Overall,
I think a lot of those was people looking, like walking past, taking a photo. No,
yeah.
If you were walking past right there and you saw 50 people at the Bovril gate with a flag, you'd have crowded round, see what the fuss was about, and maybe take a photo. But I don't think you'd have been part of the protest.
True. What's your, so obviously you made some comment earlier, what's your sort of official stance on the protest?
People have the absolute right to do whatever they want, especially, you know, the football club, to protest whatever they want. I just don't understand any of the reasoning behind it. I think you've got to give new owners a chance to come into the club. One thing I would have been critical of is that they're not showing any ambition, or if they'd not shown any, what, you know, care about winning or whatever. Even if you think they've got things wrong, I don't think you can criticise the owners for no ambition. They've spent almost $1.5 billion on the... I think it's £1.4 billion so far in total, on everything to do with the club. I mean, that's a lot of money. So I don't know if like you can come in and say like, look, you cannot agree with the process or the reset that we did or whatever you don't want to agree with. But I don't think you can criticise them in terms of their ambition for the club yet. We'll see. I know a lot of people are concerned that this is some sort of like big model to make money from transfers and stuff. I just don't think that's in any way true. I think the most important thing for Blueco is that Chelsea FC are the most successful club they can be on the pitch. It's the number one thing that's going to make their money. You know, if Chelsea win the Premier League and Champions League 5 years in a row, that's going to mean big bucks for them. So I can't see it with the criticism around it. Maybe I'm wrong on that. We will see over time. We will see this summer how they address transfers. But I've been long-time vocal advocate of this process. It's not common in UK sports, but it is common in American sports. It's not the exact same replica, but I think, you know, when you take over a club and sort of do things your own way, whatever process we had before where we've ended up with old players on huge wages, you know, that's not what they wanted to do, and that's fine, I think, and to start again in that element. So we will see over the short or medium term who's correct on that.
Yeah, I think the position sort of for me is, I think they made a mistake at the beginning and they should have brought in a bit more experience to help. But I think the young player strategy isn't a bad one. I think it was right to get rid of some of the players. I don't know about throwing the entire team out in a very short space of time. I don't think that benefited the manager either during that period. Which they maybe weren't.
Well, that's why they got rid of Tuchel, wasn't it? Was they, you know, they knew he wasn't going to be happy with that.
Well, yeah. So they kind of got in, and it's a case of, are they just getting in people that agree with them and sort of, we're doing it our way and stuff. But I do think that there are big benefits to what they're doing. Whether that plays out in the way that the fans want, which is returning to sort of top of the table battles and trying to be in the title race and stuff, I don't think you can ever guarantee anything, but obviously ambition is sort of buying a player. I think obviously the big thing this summer is, will they buy a big striker? Will they buy a goalkeeper? Will they buy a central defender? I think if they do that, I think a lot of the noise will go down against them. I think you need to judge it at the end of the season. I think January would have been the time for me to get a striker. But I think overall, I think protesting against them isn't really helpful, because they're not going to do anything. Not going to leave, are they? So I think you've just got to get behind the team. You know, it's a football team. It's no one has any right to win anything, and no one has any right to be anywhere in the league. You have to earn that on the pitch. And I think, you know, once the transfer windows are finished, you can have a go at them during when the window's open. But once it's finished, you've got to get behind the team. I don't think protesting against the ownership, you know, when we're heading into a really difficult period, is helpful at all. I don't agree with that. You know, save your protests for maybe the end of the, I don't know, August or something.
Yeah. And look, I think as well, around our squad age, you know, one thing they need is support. You know, some of them have not been playing well recently, and I think it now is a perfect time to get behind them. It's not their fault they're on the pitch. This is a strategy that's come from down top. So I just would, yeah, like you say, protesting doesn't send the right message, I don't think. And again, the annoying thing from my point of view is it sort of comes across as if he's speaking for all fans. You know, it's like when Rory Jennings is on the overlap and stuff, and it, you know, for whatever opinions he has, you know, that everyone in the Chelsea fan base disagrees with, it sort of comes across as if that's everyone's opinion. In the same way that 50 fans can stand outside the Bovril Gate, and it makes us look like we're, you know, we're all unhappy. All the season ticket holders that sit around us in the shed, none of them feel like that we've spoken to. So, including all of us. So, yeah, just a little bit strange, a little bit frustrating. Can understand, obviously, the frustration around, you know, not being at the top end of the league. But Chelsea haven't been at the top end of the league for a decade. And yeah, right now we're fifth, which I think fourth, fifth would be probably what most people would have said we would have finished at the start of the season. I don't think many would have predicted that we would finish above Arsenal and City for sure. And then Liverpool as well, probably not as well. So I think fourth really was the best we could do this season, realistically. And not every fan is happy with that, but that is a realistic outlook for this season. And right now we're 1 point behind fourth. So, I mean, I don't know what else to say, really.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. Obviously, you never know in football. But the likelihood looks there for Chelsea if they can keep going. And it's whether this young team can sustain the pressure to the end of the season. And they did well at the back end of last season, let's not forget. So they've got some sort of history there.
It's time to kick on. Leicester at home, and then Arsenal away. It's the next game in the Premier League after that, and they're not looking anything special right now at all. I don't know if they'll have any players back by then, but you know, I'm looking forward to that game.
Yeah, obviously before that kicks off, we've got Copenhagen away in our sort of first leg of the Europa Conference League, a tournament that we should be at least heading to the final, if not winning. What are you expecting Copenhagen away? Are you expecting much?
Top of the league in the Super League of Copenhagen. So expecting a tough contest. No, I mean, obviously, like I don't know much about Copenhagen, but you know, these matches that will be coming up in the Conference League, you know, should be fairly straightforward. I'd imagine, you know, it's knockout football, so you know, anything can happen, but it's not something I'm putting too much thought into, you know, the games. I'll be there. Obviously, we've bought tickets for the home, our season tickets, you know. We've done the add-on and we'll be there, but yeah, we'll be big favourites in both ties, so expecting a win.
Yeah.
Did you see what price Chelsea are to win the competition?
I think they're like 87%, aren't they? Or something like that.
It's not as high as that, I think. But, yeah, 1.66. So, yeah.
Nice. Well, lots to do. It's going to be a bit different, obviously, because we've got the games on Sunday, Leicester Sunday, and then Arsenal Sunday for the second leg. So it does make sense to try and finish the tie in the first leg, so to speak. It'll be interesting to see how much rotation is. Obviously, we're a little bit short on injuries. Maybe we've got some people coming back. So Fofana was in the squad. And Badiashile posted that he was sort of knocking around. So I might have a few people back. So we'll see. Lovely. Well, look, it feels good to get the win, and it feels like we're moving upwards rather than sort of slowly falling away. But yeah, thanks very much, Craig.
No worries.
That's all we've got time for today. We'll be back with a preview for Leicester City at home, which is our second of our home games in a row. But for more updates on all things the SCR, you can follow us on X at EatSleepChelsea and Instagram at EatSleepChelseaRepeat. As always, we hope you're carefree wherever you may be, and thanks for listening.